This is Vacant Expressions, 1 hour of your life you will not get back. We are your hosts, John and Wesley Fox, and for this episode 76, we are going to be reviewing season 3 of Stranger Things, which is an awesome fucking show. It premiered in June, so this is like almost 2 months later, but if this were like a normal show, it would take 2 months to get through the season. But I am aware that probably millions of people probably binged it in the first few nights or the first week or so, but we gave it a little bit of time. So that is what we are going to talk about today. And as always, we will start with what we're drinking. So, John, what are you drinking?
Today, I'm on like another trendy health bandwagon that's still alcoholic. I'm drinking this Truly hard seltzer. It's with a hint of passion fruit. I don't know. It's a great way to stay in shape. They're pretty delightful. They're really delicious. It kind of feels like you're drinking. It kind of doesn't. And, yeah, I'd recommend them for someone that kind of wants to have a few drinks, but nothing too hard and nothing that'll have a lot of calories. But as far as, like, you know, highbrow alcohol enthusiasts, it's really a cop-out.
I've tried those. They are deceptive because you don't really – there's not much bite or kick to it. You can't really taste too much of, you know, whether it's vodka or whatever, what's in there. So, like, I've had a couple, and it sneaks up on you really quickly. You think it's mm-hmm. you think it's low in alcohol content. It isn't. It's basically equal to a beer, right?
Yeah, it's like 5%. Yeah. I mean, it's not super high, but, I mean, it does seem like you're just drinking water with barely any flavor in it and stuff, so it'll sneak up on you. And they're refreshing. I mean, it's great for a summer day, something that's not too heavy that you want to drink a lot of.
Yeah.
I definitely recommend it. What are you drinking? You got to be drinking something more interesting than me.
I wish. Unfortunately, I've kind of cut back on the red wine because it's getting, like, actually hot here for the first, you know, for the first time this year. Like, it started getting hot in mid-July. And now it's kind of sustaining. So I switched to a white wine, which is easier to drink when it's hot out. Red wine kind of puts me to sleep. It's a little too heavy when it's really warm out. So I have a Chateau Saint Michel Chardonnay. Basically, this is like one of the most standard Chardonnays you can buy at any grocery store or any wine shop across the country. It's a solid Chardonnay for the price point. I mean, it's only $12-13, and it gets the job done. So I'm not a big fan of Chardonnays, and I guess like when I was shopping, I didn't feel like spending $20-25 on a Chardonnay. So I just went with one of the Chardonnays I know I like, and it is actually a little bit on. These are usually on the refreshing side, actually, the Chateau Saint Michel ones. So they're not as dry as other Chardonnays, and they're not as they're kind of lighter bodied, which. Yeah, Chardonnays tend to be, but not all of them. So, yeah, that is my drink of choice for this number 76. And, I'll do like a virtual cheers right now.
Oh, yeah. Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, hit the mic.
Tried to make it classy, but
I didn't know it was happening.
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought of that like instantly at that moment. Like, yeah, I was holding it in front of me, like towards the computer, as if I was toasting the computer. And I'm just like, let's do like a virtual toast. I don't know. Fuck it. Yeah, that's the kind of things we do here.
So we got something exciting to talk about. I know it's been out for a while, but Stranger Things is just amazing. I think all of America enjoys binge watching Stranger Things. It's just such an amazing phenomenon. I'd like to talk about season 3, what's awesome about it, what we didn't like, and just Stranger Things, the phenomenon that it is on pop culture right now and how it's just so universally loved. I'd really like to touch on that and just see if we have any theories on why.
Sure. I did some quick checking on how loved this show is, and it has an 8.9 on IMDb.com. That is, like, insanely high. I think there's only – I mean, the only shows that have a higher score than that are, like, Breaking Bad, Mad Men, and Game of Thrones. Most shows stay in the mid to high sevens. The good ones get into the eights. To have an 8.9 and also to have 650,000 reviews on IMDb. Yeah, 644,000, which is pretty – that's a pretty big sample size of reviews. So It is also, I mean, you go to any other aggregate site, I mean, this is just loved. And I guess, I don't know, maybe just to start, I just think, like, it captures, like, for a lot of us that are older, like 30s, 40s, and that have some memory. I mean, maybe you and I did not grow up in the 80s, but we watched a lot of movies from the 80s. And, and even
yeah,
the
70s. Yeah, that was a lot of our pop culture, the reruns we watched. Like, we still kind of felt like we were living in the afterglow of the 80s, you know,
yeah.
as, like, kids growing up. So, like, this is all still very familiar to us.
It yeah, it absolutely was. The music, the – I mean, I'll just start with it. I love the intro. I never skip the intro. And the text, the font they use, you know, it's that classic horror novel.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's so
like,
cool.
It's like you're diving into a book. They really – the no other I don't think no other, like, film or television media has ever done a better representation of what it's like to, like, read a book. And, like, watch something on TV as the same way, because they never get it quite right. And I don't know, none of this stuff, was this a book first, or this is all screenplay first?
My understanding is this all comes from the mind of the Duffer brothers, Matt and Ross Duffer. They're the creators, and they're the writers. I don't think this is based on anything. I think this is just their baby. And
yeah, so and that's incredible. Like, it really just feels like it goes through like that. Obviously, they call them chapters. They do it with their cinematography. There's this cartoonishness to it, but it's still like live action and dramatic. Like, I don't know, it does a really good job. And I feel like, you know, we all like these, like, kids things where, like, kids get to do extraordinary things that parents don't think they're able to do. Like, we can all connect to that even as adults. And I think that's freaking awesome. But then this also has so much real adult stuff that they're actually dealing with. You know, it could almost be like a rated R horror in some ways, even though it still is, you know, maintains probably like a PG-13 style rating. But I don't know. It's just fantastic. And I just can't believe how universally loved it is by everyone. Like, it's so cool that everyone could just share this together. Anyone I talk to, like, you could just start talking about Stranger Things and just, like, everyone shares the same type of excitement. And it's weird. It's not something that we all used to share, you know? Like, this style or this genre, like, this is something that's new. Kind of like when Game of Thrones took over and a lot of people that weren't fantasy fans are all of a sudden, like, really into it.
Yeah, the crossover on this thing is amazing. Like, you're absolutely right. Like, there's people. I mean, there's a lot. Obviously, anyone younger than like 30 is not going to have any memory of the 80s whatsoever, and they might have seen a couple of the movies. We got exposed to a lot more because we started watching a ton of movies and TVs like starting in like the late 80s, early 90s when we were kids, and then started watching a ton in the mid 90s. But I mean, a lot of what we were watching were classics from that decade. And so, and you know, some of the I mean, the other thing I'd bring up is that it's surprising how well it connects is the fashion and a lot of the visuals, like that's all like that used to, I mean, that used to be, we used to joke about the ridiculous things people wore in the 80s. Like, it was kind of a thing. It was, you know, you did it kind of ironically or whatever, whenever you dress. And so to see it in this show, and everyone in the show wears this stuff. And is just like, that's just what they wore back then. That's the setting. That's what the show is. And like, it does. It's like a time machine. Like, you're like, holy shit, I'm convinced that's exactly what a small town in Indiana might have looked like in 85 and 86. Like, it's amazing.
It's fantastic. Now, more specifically, to talk about the third season. Third season again was awesome, but I will say some things that were different. And I mostly, you know, there's just nothing but awesome things to say about it. But the things that I didn't like or that were a little bit odd to me definitely stand out. I want to talk about first. First, I felt like a little bit of the suspension of disbelief, as I believe you had put it, or just like how scary or how like much you actually like feared for what was going on was definitely taken down. The cartoonishness was kind of turned up a little bit, which, I mean, I think kind of goes hand in hand with like the suspension of disbelief and it not being as realistic. You know, you're just not feeling it as much. And then some of the characters seem to be written a little bit more one-dimensionally, even though it was still fun and entertaining the whole time. None of these things were deal breakers. They were just noticeable and at times a little bit annoying.
Yeah, I think you're right. They tried to lighten up on the horror side. I mean, the first season was straight horror. It was dark. Mm-hmm. It was scary. There was the unknown The kids were dealing with this for the very first time. These extraordinary things.
They didn't understand anything. There was so much more mystery, you know.
Yeah, and so now we're at season three, and this is their third round up against the Mind Flayer, or the second round against the Mind Flayer, the third round against the Upside Down. And they're just, you know, a lot of that fear is gone because they've already done this. And so they've lightened up on the horror, and I think they've gotten heavier for, like, the family drama and the coming-of-age stuff. That was a lot heavier in Season 3 than in previous seasons.
And maybe that was an important choice, you know? I'm kind of missing the point, too, of, like, what they're developing with their characters a little bit more. But then again, in some ways, I felt like they were also a little bit more one-dimensional. So even though they did spend more time on the characters, like personal interactions, I still felt like it was a little bit lazier and stuff. Like maybe the characters were a little bit complex before, and they didn't seem as complex this round. But then again, you know, they're becoming teenagers and stuff, so maybe that was good writing.
And
teenagers suck.
changing the tone a little bit. I think for one thing, they executed it very well, but it is different now than it was in season one. So the show is changing a little bit, which, you know, the actors are getting older, like physically. You can't write around that. You're going to have to age them in the show, otherwise
And it's cool that they started to develop more like the romantic interest and stuff, even though some of it I didn't feel like was super necessary. I mean, I like that. At least maybe they're still doing it, and then people of that age and demographic are still really identifying with this, even though like for us older people it might not be as relevant. But I mean, I guess that's another segue into something else that I thought was an unexpected you know, pro to like how it just crosses all the demographics. And I think when you have characters that are in that age group, even kids that are that age that didn't grow up in the 80s could still identify with them. And then anybody like us or older that like kind of remembers the 80s or actually grew up in the 80s feels a way stronger connection to it. So you end up being able to connect to multiple generations simultaneously. So I feel like having that type of throwback with that type of age group really, really kind of helps you potentially capture a lot of audiences if you do it right. And I think Stranger Things is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, and I think the other way they get away with that too, I think, is they've put a lot of focus on two adult characters, two of the parents,
mm-hmm.
David Harbour as Jim Hopper and Winona Ryder as Joyce Byers, and they've steadily brought more and more and more. I mean, Winona Ryder was just a crazy, crazy mother in season one.
Oh, my God.
And she nailed it.
She is crushing this whole series. Oh, my God. What a great revival for her. Like, just, she's too good almost. It's like, is she acting?
Yeah.
Or is she just not taking medication?
I could, too, whatever it is. I mean, I hope if she's off medication, it's with a doctor's okay, but because it's working.
I don't really know about her mental health. I'm just making a bad joke. But honestly, she's fucking crushing it. Like, she is so convincing. It's amazing. And it was almost comedic. Like, me and Jesse were making fun of how, like, she seems all tweaked out. It's like, Will's been through so much more, and he seems to be handling it better than her. That's seriously, Mom, calm down.
I am glad that Will was not the center of the trauma in this season, because it started like
that would have been hard to watch again if you would have went through that stuff. Because in the second one, when Will went through everything, it was all like, this poor kid, why Will again?
I was so worried about it when they were showing his goosebumps on his neck, like in the first episode, and I'm like, oh, come on, are we going to go through more Will? Are we going to put Will Byers through more trauma? Stop beating that drum. Thankfully, they did not do that at all. Will Byers
partially play that role, but at least it's a little bit more proud and he's not the victim all the time.
No, the trauma was really, it's Billy, Max's brother, and it's 11, or L, kind of go through the most trauma in this one, at least physically. The rest of them kind of, well, I guess, yeah, later on, Steve and Robin do too. I mean, I'm sure everyone probably would have realized by now, we're going to spoil the shit out of this, so. I'll put that in the show notes too to make sure, because we didn't put a spoiler alert at the front of the show, but whatever. We told you we were going to review the whole season, so it's kind of hard to do that without spoiling a few things in the middle. But anyway, I'm glad that they didn't just focus on, all right, how much more shit can we put Will through? Like, I'm glad they moved away from that. They moved more towards, I mean, The adult characters were definitely funnier. I mean, David Harbour is hysterical as Jim Hopper. Yeah, I love that character so much. Like, that has been... I mean, talk about, like, taking actors and actresses that the rest of Hollywood seems to treat like a garbage heap of, like, role players. And to put... Like, David Harbour, I know he's done other movies. I've seen him in plenty of things. But he's never been the center of anything. And and Winona Ryder's career has been, you know... Her kind of golden age was in the 90s and late 80s. And so to bring them back and to put him front and center in this show... And it's just, it's so well done. I mean, they're both, like, David Harbour's just, as a guy trying to be a father to a teenage girl, like, just struggling with it, it's just fucking hysterical. It's great. It's great.
But at sometimes I felt like that was a little bit over the top and he was getting one-dimensional. Like, I definitely liked that part of the plot and I thought that was, like, funny and relevant. But at sometimes I was like, all right, we get it. You're mad. But that was kind of the comedic aspect, and I guess when you binge watch it, it seems like it's laid on pretty thick. But if you watch the episodes at a reasonable rate, it's probably not that bad.
Yeah.
No. But we all know the goal is to watch this in one fucking sitting. That's how you do Stranger Things. Everybody fucking knows it. And if you're lucky enough to do it and watch it for the first time in one sitting, you know your friends are jealous.
It's easy. Even though they're all at almost an hour long, so you're looking at almost 8 hours to
binge it. It's a day's work.
People do it. I know they said...
that's how I watched the first season, and the second one was broken up into two sessions, and this last one was broken up into like three or four sessions, I think, so unfortunately. But I did save the last episode for a completely different session because I knew it was just going to be over for a long time, and I just had to save it a little bit more. If it wasn't going to be watched in one binge-watch session... We did, like, drag it out a little bit, and I'm glad. It was, like, a special event. We're watching the last episode of Season 3, get some good food going.
Yeah, it would... But, yeah, absolutely. And the... Man, I lost my train of thought after all that. The, Where were we? We were with,
I'm talking about nothing, so it's
okay.
All
right. Yeah, I'm trying to think what else. The suspension of disbelief. Yeah, one of the other things that bothered me. Like, these other things that we're talking about now are kind of, in the end, it didn't really hurt it because, again, mm-hmm. Will wasn't put through trauma. Yes, Hopper yells a lot, and that does, if you do binge that, and I did binge like three episodes in a row, one in one sitting, and it was getting tiresome. So like that there's a little bit of that, but it wasn't enough.
But it's still minor. It's still minor, and the only reason it stands out is because it's otherwise like flawless, and you just have this high standard now. So those little things kind of stood out, but at the same time, like we were insanely captivated and loved the whole freaking thing. There's no denying it.
No, the thing I was wanting to get to is the ones that bother me more is the. Not the comedy, like the way they're breaking up the horror, like that was a creative choice, and I think in the end I kind of agree with it. But some of the things they put in this show, like damn it, I mean it's fantasy and it's horror, but if you're going to introduce a secret Soviet base underneath a mall, and this is going to be part of your story now, and it's not, you know, there's, and you're just asking us to, they were just asking me to believe a lot, that one, they could build all that without being noticed, two, that they're all walking around in fucking Soviet uniforms in America. Like, even though, yeah. Whether you're underground or not, why would you bother bringing a uniform to the U.S. at all? And some...
There'd be no point whatsoever. And if everyone had to bail for some reason or something, they'd have to, like, look like regular people or just look like American military or just anything else. Absolutely right. We definitely thought of that, too.
The base doesn't look real to me. The base looks like it's a Bond underground lair. It's way too elaborate and way too clean and, like, state-of-the-art and everything. And I'm like, what the... Like, I'm like, God, that wasn't necessary. An underground base, I could have... I mean, they have to... It has to be underground and to do what they're trying to do. That's not the part that bothered me. But just, like, dropping down, like, 10, 15 floors down from the mall, that huge, long hallway, and then, like, this really elaborate control rooms and all this shit. And I'm just like... I mean, they'd have to improvise.
You're right. It did get kind of ridiculous, and it just happened to be under their town again and stuff. It is, even though the whole thing is ridiculous, like the first two seasons still had this weird, like, realistic element to it. Yeah. And it did start to get more campy. It did start to get more cartoonish, and it still kept the entertainment value. But there wasn't, like, this edge-of-your-seat thrill aspect to it that the other seasons had.
That was
noticeable.
Yeah, and just, I mean, little things, but, like, you know, that really could have been easy to fix and wasn't necessary. Like, for example, that Terminator dude walking through the fair with a gun and nobody notices. That's insulting.
He was so cheesy. A Russian Terminator.
Yeah, stuff. I know. He looked.
Yeah. And then the music, when he hit, it was almost like the Terminator music when Arnold would come on. I was like, doom, doom. Like.
I guess maybe they were going for that. It just.
Yeah, no, they absolutely.
But it just missed. I don't know.
But the other thing is if, like, they're ripping it off, like, this show isn't a parody show. You know, like, I mean, even though they do some things that have been done before and it's not 100% original, like, that, it really started to get cartoonish. Like, you guys are, like, openly, even with the music and everything, like, referencing the Terminator. And that was just a little cartoonish. It was like, so how much are we going to scare this guy? It kind of seems like he's more funny than anything.
Yeah, that was kind of the thing. Like, the way he walked around in that flat face and, like, as he's chasing them and, you know, He's able to get away with so much in front of, like, with the cops, like, talking to that guy at the 7-Eleven, and he's in there, like, threatening the cashier. And I mean, that one wasn't really a big deal, but it's just accumulated over time. I'm like, this guy walks around like nobody can see him, and he's like a tall guy with a Russian or Eastern European accent or Russian, depending on what scene he's in. I'm like, all right, I mean, I know a big part of this show is that there's the normal Hawkinstown, the normal, like, experience, and they don't notice any of this going on. Only the kids notice, and only, you know, Jim Hopper and Joyce do. But it's because they can't see it. It's not visible, and they always dismiss it as something else. But when you can't put it right in front of them in a county fair with a guy walking around with a gun, I'm like, all right, I know we're trying to make them oblivious, but they're not. It's not like they're blind. You see somebody walking through the fair with a gun. Anyway, I guess that's the one that hurt me a little bit. The underground base hurt a little bit. Not enough to really knock the whole season off course. It may have just damaged one episode, and that's it. But, yeah. I mean, I knew Alexei was probably going to die, but I still wasn't happy about it. when he's, like, so happy, like, he's about to get corn dogs, he won the top prize at the fair, and then Terminator shoots him, and I'm just like, aww. I mean, I knew he probably wasn't going to make it, but aww.
One of the highlight moments, though, the never-ending story.
Yes, so, another.
that was pretty fantastic. As dumb as it was, I'm glad that it was there.
Yeah, another way.
If they're going to be cartoonish and stuff, I'm glad they added some cool, dumb stuff like that. I love that thing is named Cerebro.
I know. That was good.
At work, we're talking about, like, having this, like, central repository for, like, just information on any process to be in. You'd think it'd be, like, a no-brainer, you know, but, like, I guess we're finally doing it. And then we're all supposed to, like, make suggestions on what we should actually call it. And then someone was like, Cerebro, and it's like, I don't even know what else to say. I mean, it should be that. I'll just say Cerebro, too.
It's like if you already voted for something else, you're just like, can I change my vote?
Let's go Cerebro.
No, I mean, I was laughing when they were singing the Never Ending Story. I'm just like, this is probably, no, most movies, you don't do it in that scene because it's like the climax of the whole season. And yeah. They're like, nope, we're going to take a minute to sing the Never Ending Story.
And she was hilarious, you know? Like, it's like his girlfriend was real, but the whole thing was embarrassing. So it was like a great bittersweet moment. Like, he got to prove she existed, but he still, like, you know, gets to be made fun of in front of his friends over it. It was great. Very relatable.
Now, what did you think of... because, like, a good part of the show, like, the non... monster part of the show is kind of the tension that's growing between the party, like all the different the boys that, you know, started off as the crew. Like, mm-hmm. There's kind of this season is there's some distance between them, you know, Dustin and the rest of them, Will and the rest of them. Like, it was, I mean, they didn't have that in the first two seasons, and this is a lot about coming of age.
What are you talking about? In the first season, there was that big rift because what's his name was hanging out with Elle all the time and taking care of her. And then he's all like, you're putting her in front of the group, or you're like, you know, like abandoning us for some girl. There's been some rifts in the group, is all I'm saying.
Yes, there's been some rifts in the group, but this was a front. This is like a front and center theme for about six episodes of the group splintering.
Yeah.
Not so much. Yeah, Mike's obsession with Elle in season one was kind of building and building, but it was like it came front and center in one episode, and then episode later they're like resolving it. This one, I mean, there's like, you know, Will still wants to play D&D. The other guys don't. The guys that have girlfriends, they're getting more and more obsessed with that.
Yeah. That's right. They did have all that stuff going on.
Dustin kind of feels like a little marginalized, so he starts hanging out with Steve a lot more.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And then, like, at the end, like, it all starts to tie back together. And just the way they've incorporated Steve into this is fucking great. Because he's not one of the party, and he's, like, he's not a nerd. So, like, a lot of this stuff is way over his head. But they still find ways to incorporate Steve into the adventure. It's just, it's great. But,
No. How about the standout star of the third season, dude's little sister?
Erica. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, my God. She was hilarious. She was incredible. Any scene that she was in was just fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It's like if Ice Cube came back as a little girl.
Yeah, her, like,
she just had so much attitude. It was fantastic. Like, she was awesome.
I know, she kind of swings her head from side to side as she talks, and just really, really sassy, like, at all times. And then to be called out as a nerd by Dustin was fucking great. It was awesome.
Yeah, that was a really great moment. I'm not that much of a nerd or something like that.
All right, what about the Mind Flayer and his zombie army, like, as the new kind of manifestation of the villain? Like, did that do anything for you one way or the other? Like, is it just, like, par for the course now that it's this giant kind of spidery looking thing?
I mean, that thing was really weird and unique all around, like, because it was like weird melted flesh it was made out of and then reformed, but it was still like kind of like gushy and bizarre. Like, that was a new one. I don't remember something else being like that before.
I'm coming to think of it, that part, yeah, it was kind of, and also his overall design, or the, you know, what he looks like is exactly what he looked like in season two, except he's more muscular and fleshy and made of rats and stuff. And it's just like the zombie army he had, I guess, was kind of I guess they had kind of something like that in season two. At first I was a little worried that they're taking body invasion of the body snatchers or puppet master kind of element to that part of it, because they're sweating, like there's like physiological changes when they are under the control of the monster.
But, the Mind Slayer.
Yeah, Mind Flayer.
Flayer?
Flayer.
Oh, why?
You'll have to look that up in the D&D thing, because that's where they got the name.
Oh.
Yeah, they designated him the Mind Flayer in season two. Dustin kind of tried to like describe like what the creature was or what the monster was, and he said it's like the Mind Flayer. And so he pulls out the D&D book and starts like telling everyone about it, and you know, the adults in the room are just like, why are we listening to this kid? It's like,
so. Well, it's just why we're gonna call it this. It doesn't really help us.
Well, and then Nancy kind of steps in. She's like, "Look, this is the best analogy we have right now, so we're just gonna call it this because we don't know what do you want to call it?
Yeah, what do you want to call it? You got something better? You know what it's really called? Sorry, I don't know the Latin term for it."
It comes from the same universe as Cthulhu, you know, as one of Lovecraft's monsters that has like this really long, hard to pronounce name, like Yazagoth or something. But yeah, that's they call him Mind Flayer. And I guess like there's a little bit of like Invasion of the Body Snatchers or Puppet Master thing going on there. I don't know. I wasn't looking too forward to kind of a zombie thing going on, but I don't. The way it played out was not the way I saw it playing out. So, I liked it. I think it went really well.
Man, was there anything else new that happened? Because I'm trying to draw a blank on more Stranger Things stuff. I mean, we spoiled it enough. It doesn't matter if we keep on talking about it. Keep on talking about it, honestly. But was there any other news that happened? Any good science news?
Science news.
I mean, any other movies coming out? I don't know.
Well, we did the whole rundown in the last episode. I can do it again, but there's really there's no new news, really.
No, there's nothing new. You're right. You're right.
And then, I didn't prepare any science shit.
I don't know if I read anything new.
Yeah. What about another new character, Robin? Steve's coworker.
Oh yeah. All right. So with her, I mean, she went from like decoding a Russian message, which is already pretty cool, to like all of a sudden being pretty okay with most of this messed up shit. Like the kids have had two runs to go through it and she adapted pretty quick. Which, I mean, they had a few moments that humbled her where she was like actually really freaking out more than the other people. But at the same time, it's like, nah, they really should have, she needs to have some PTSD or something. She shouldn't have been so much comic relief, in my opinion.
Yeah, that, there wasn't, they never really gave enough time to the shock that Erica and Robin both should have had. It's one thing to be, the shock of being in our underground Russian base is one thing. But once they start seeing the crazy shit, you know, like L throwing a car or the Mind Flayer itself, like they had no time to really show like there's two new characters here that have never seen this shit before.
Mm-hmm.
And oh yeah, you're right. They didn't like there was, you know, they got from point A to point B a little pretty quickly.
Yeah, it escalated quickly. I mean, she's just a badass, I guess, is what they're trying to say. But I mean, she kind of had like a cool attitude to her and stuff, like she was, but like that was still a lot to take in to be a badass. Like, you know, even any sort of normal person would just have to have a little bit more time to process that and freak out.
Yeah.
It was just a more comedic season and it was more, you know, unrealistic, I suppose.
Yeah, because everyone else in the crew is already experienced this and the shock is over, like, I guess they did not want to do that again for new characters.
And weigh us down with it and stuff. I mean, it might be exhausting for the audience to have to go through that. Like, they probably thought about that, too. And that's why they still showed a couple moments where she was definitely like that.
Yeah, Yeah, see, I guess, like, this is what happens, like, when you decide to take a slightly different tone in Season 3 than the previous seasons, like, some of these things are noticeable, because it's, you know, we're so used to, like, the shock and awe of all this, you know, and now it's gone. Now, like, well, what are you going to do? You can't show them just being like, oh, all right, let's go another round. Like, no, so you introduce some comedy to it, like, there's something, you know, you're so upset, you're laughing kind of thing. It was really the only way they could do the best way to do this, you know, without showing the same thing again for a third season in a row. And I think maybe that's why they took this tone, which sometimes I think got a little bit, to the almost into the cheesy and campy category of horror movies. You know, you're not, you know, I love this because it's really, really good at what it does. I don't want it to start becoming something else entirely. So, like, I don't know. I'm glad it got a little close to the boundary, but it didn't cross over.
Yeah, and I think because things end up like de-evolving or end up going in a more cheesy direction as they move on, I'm going to expect it to keep going that way a little bit and kind of lower my expectations because, I mean, it's set such a high bar, and if I keep it there, it's going to, like, disappoint me. There's no way they can keep it up. You know, so I'm just going to be excited to see another adventure that they go on and hope they just keep on delivering the same type of quality for the most part, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, go ahead and talk about the ending of where they left, where they're leaving everything at the end of the season.
I was so down with it. I was like, come on, keep going. It's getting cheesy. It's getting over the top. Let's fucking do this. That's kind of how I felt.
No, the final scenes, like the buyers moving out. Like, did I lose you? Oh, there you are. Okay.
Oh, no. So them, like them leaving town and stuff?
Yeah. no, Hopper presumed dead. He might actually be dead, but I'm not 100% convinced. And then, yeah, the buyer, you know, Joyce, John, and Will, like, and
all
moving.
All that's going to happen is these kids are going to bring their fucked up drama to another town.
Yeah.
And they're still going to have to meet up and help each other. I mean, they do good working independently anyway, so, but one way or another, man, they're both bringing trouble to their new towns, unfortunately. So I feel bad for wherever they're moving.
Yeah.
It's just gonna happen.
Well, they normally go with three storylines going on at once, and it's three different kind of subgroups. And I guess it's gonna work differently now. The subgroups, I think. So instead of having John and Nancy, like, or John, you know, Jonathan and Nancy working together constantly, like, I think it's gonna have to be Jonathan actually working directly with Elle and Will now. And, you know, so that now they're going to be one of the streams because they're in a different town. But, I mean, it was just so, I mean, it's just so depressing to watch, you know, the scene where they're moving, you know, kids are crying and, like, they're going through their house and, like, moving out. And then, of course, Elle dealing with
tough.
The loss. It's just,
oh my God,
it's heavy.
That was tough. Yeah, that was tough. I mean, as mostly light this one was compared to the other ones, they still were able to have those, like, heavy, intense scenes that really hit you. I mean, even though that one chick's brother was a douchebag, that was still rough having her having to watch him die and stuff. Like, oh my God, we're spoiling everything. Nobody should listen to this that hasn't seen everything.
Don't worry. I'll put it all over the page.
Yeah, so. But anyway, like, even that got intense, and he wasn't a particularly likable character, but they still did a really good job. And you felt for her. Like, you still connected with her as a character.
Her as in the sister, Max?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Billy in the previous season was to me a cartoonish, like, not even a real character. Like, this bad boy shows up smoking cigarettes and he's like the, you know, the foil to Steve, and, you know, he's just this big badass. And then you start seeing him humanized because he's been, you know, abused and everything, and then we see the scenes of his childhood and everything. But really, like, Billy to me was just a shitty character up until the point he gets taken over by the Mind Flayer. And then you start seeing him trying to struggle against it. And then, of course, you see kind of a glimpse into his childhood with Elle. But up until then, like, I just thought he was a shitty character. And I was like, dude, you can get rid of him whenever you want.
Yeah, I mean, they took some risks with the people that died, but some were also safe.
Yeah, I honestly thought Hopper was going to be sick. I didn't think they'd go Game of Thrones and start killing kid characters.
I don't know. I also didn't think they would kill, like, her, like, you know, potential love interest and stuff after a man died last time. Like, I don't know. That was tough. That poor woman. No wonder she's so frazzled.
Yeah. Oh, and we haven't had a chance to talk about one of your favorite characters, Bald Eagle.
First of all, I love him. He's hilarious. He always plays side characters in, like, really good comedies. Like, he's just a good, like, you know, character actor for sure. But, like, that nickname handle for the kids, like, making fun of him stuff. Like, there was some stuff that was, like, the cartoonish comedy that was just so well done. I freaking loved it. And, like, that Bald Eagle thing was just fantastic. It's like, I don't know. It's like a compliment and a burn at the same time. The whole fighting the Russians and stuff. Like, I don't know, dude. That was just perfect. I don't know if that joke's been made before by clowning someone that was bald in, like, a military-type operation, but that was fantastic.
Yeah, he was great in the previous season when he basically just dropped all that, like, truth on Nancy and Jonathan, like, about how they're actually in love with each other. Then he does the same thing a season later with Joyce and Jim, and it's like,
oh, yeah.
I'm like, this is his side gig, is like he's a love therapist for, like, the other characters. Or whatever. I don't.
Well, these type of intense situations get people really close, apparently. You know, I learned that from Speed.
Yeah, I know. A lot of what we know about psychology comes from action movies.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Especially Keanu Reeves movies.
Yeah.
We can all.
There's a lot of depth.
We can all learn a lot from Keanu.
You know, what a great unlikely hero to become a huge sensation. Not even a particularly great actor, but at the same time, like, I mean, he just does what he does. It's great. I mean, he's just one of the true, like, class acts in Hollywood. And there's been, like, little underground stuff about that for years, and I'm just, like, glad now that's on the surface. Tell me you've seen Always Be My Maybe. Have you watched it yet?
Where he shows up?
Yeah.
I've seen this. I've watched the scene on YouTube. Like,
when he walks in. Like, the whole dinner. Yeah. No, like, you got to see, like, the whole dinner, where it fits in the plot. It's fantastic. And then how the movie ends, there's another reference to it. Like, it was well done. And, I mean, nothing is better to me than a Hollywood star playing themselves as a fucking jackass. I mean, that's just, like, an awesome, humble, likeness about it. Like, usually they're, like, usually a nicer guy than that. And that's, like, they want to do, like, a caricature of, like, the worst people they've probably met in Hollywood. So it's, like, even though it's this exaggeration, you know they're probably using real Hollywood stories to, like, mold this asshole character. It's like, oh, I heard Bruce Willis used to do this all the time.
I when I think of that, I always think of Tom Cruise's character in Tropic Thunder. Oh, and yeah. I'm like, that's got to be based on somebody, like, specific.
Yeah. Yeah, whenever they're doing, like, an asshole agent or manager or something like that, and they are going over the top, like, because they all know those people so much.
I know. I mean, and I know it's off topic, but Tom Cruise killed that role. That was just fantastic.
It's the best thing he's ever done.
I really think that might have been his best role, like, in his entire career. That was so damn good.
It's a fact.
Diet Coke! Fucking needs his Diet Coke, man. Alright, let's see what else. I don't think there's anything else I wanted to bring up. Maybe just more generally, I just love this show, and I love how well done it's made, how well it's written, how well it's acted. These child actors that they got are just awesome, like, front to back. Like, it's just, there's, you don't really get the idea that you're just watching, like, a bunch of Disney Mouseketeers that, you know, maybe they can act, maybe they can't. Like, these are all legit actors, and, like, they bring the drama. They definitely, like, I was definitely starting to tear up in the season finale, and I mean, there's just some great moments in this show, and man, it's, I think it might be the best thing Netflix has.
Yeah, I'm glad it exists. I'm glad everybody loves it. And I'm glad it's, like, even just a guilty pleasure for people to want to binge watch it. Like, that's anyone that you talk to, it's like, oh, I'm going to binge watch Stranger Things. Like, ah, oh, lucky. I don't know. It's just, it's pretty cool. I mean, I watched season one, New Year's Day after it had come out. Oh, something else I meant to mention. And I didn't know this, so someone that pointed this out to me. You know, every time it's been released, the show has been during that time of the year.
Yeah, I think you were telling me, like, because you were, like, kind of disappointed it wasn't coming out in Halloween, because shit always happens, like, in the show, shit is always happening during Halloween, and it's released at Halloween.
But I guess that's not necessarily true, because one of the other ones was released during a different time of year, and that's when the show was set. I think it was, like, around New Year's or Christmas or something. It was around Christmas. It was the first one. And then the next one was around Halloween. And then the one after that was in July or whatever, and that's what this is. So they all are around different holidays, essentially. And that's when they've been released. And when someone pointed that out to me, I was like, holy shit, that's right. Because remember the Christmas theme and stuff from the first one. That was my sweater for a Christmas party.
Dude, that's, yeah.
So that's kind of cool. That's kind of legit. Now I'm not as mad that, like, you know, it wasn't during Halloween again. Because, you know, we almost didn't want to watch it till Halloween, but we're like, it's going to get spoiled. We have to watch it in a reasonable amount of time. We can't wait too long. Yeah. But after that was pointed out, then all of that, like, went away, and I just thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I'm hoping we don't have to wait a year and a half. You know, I mean, well, if they do it at Halloween next year, if it is another, I mean, there's no reason for them to do Halloween again. They can do whatever they want, because the narrative is complete, can go in any direction at this point. Mm-hmm. If they want to, I mean, we do know those the Derma dogs, whatever those things are. Like, we know they're still. Dogs. Yeah, like, they're still around. There is the chance that Hopper is still alive and being held by the Russians. L's powers are gone. I mean, there's, like, a bunch of shit that they leave you with that you don't know how they're... I mean, you maybe can start guessing at how they're going to use it in the next season. So
I feel like, did this one leave more like a cliffhanger, like, from one season to the next than the other ones? Because the other ones, I felt like they ended a little bit more like the end of a movie, where there wasn't a cliffhanger. Was this the first one that had that much of a cliffhanger? Have they always done that?
I remember at the end of season one, there is, like, I'm pretty sure it was there, where Will goes into the bathroom and he pukes up one of those slug things into the sink.
That's right. They do always end it with a little bit of a hint or a reference. That's right.
Yeah.
But this one, I felt like they set up a lot of different stuff. There was, like, a lot of open-ended stuff. It wasn't just, like, one little gag.
No, yeah, there's a couple open ends here.
Did you see what I did there?
No. What was it?
Well, because he gagged.
Oh, got it. So I'm trying to think. There was L. There was the scene in Russia. Well, presumably Russia. I'm trying to think. There was one other thing at the end that kind of was hinting. Oh, I mean, at some point, I'm pretty sure L's sister is going to play back into it.
That's
just too cool a thing to leave out. But, yeah, so, I mean, there was no hint of that in the final episode, but I just feel like, you know, you can't introduce something that cool and not use it later on. So, I don't know. I would not be surprised if that is one of the big things in season four, or if it's, you know, Russia, or, you know, L's. I don't know. They always, like, introduce a bunch of things that, like, I just did not expect. Like, this season they did, and I'm sure they will next season. They're just really good at this. And, yeah, I'm psyched. Unfortunately, I think we're going to have to wait a while.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one bittersweet thing about watching it all in one short period of time.
Yeah.
You get to enjoy it, but then it's gone. It's gone again.
Well, you just... And I tried to find something else. Like, somebody suggested Dark, and I watched the first episode of it on Netflix, and... Yeah, it's. I guess maybe it's like a German version of Stranger Things, but I don't know. Like, the style of it is different, so I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's in. Well, it's dubbed, so I mean, there's no subtitles really. But it's you know, it's set in Germany, so they're really speaking German, and then there's English dubbed. But it starts off as the same thing, kind of missing children, big government facility. Dark Woods kind of thing. I don't know. I'm trying to find something to fill the void of Stranger Things.
You think Dark will fill the void?
I was told it kind of does, but I've only... So far, I'm like, yeah, this seems really, really just sterile. Like, I don't know. Maybe that's just how people are in Germany. I don't know. But there's just, like, a lot of blank stares and, like, expressionless faces. Like, so far.
Riveting.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's any cool science news or anything. We just need to get the James Webb telescope to go up before there's anything really groundbreaking or cool. Every once in a while, there's a cool exoplanet, but there's always so many. And without the James Webb up there being able to peer into their atmospheres, what's the point?
Oh, did we? Oh, yeah, we did. We talked about the asteroid that nearly missed Earth. That's right.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Yeah, there's that.
I think the best way for us to kind of prevent that is if we start investing in, like, mining asteroids at the same time, like that. Like, in order to do that, we might want to change its trajectory to get it closer to us, you know? And it's like, if we want to do that, then we could maybe save us. It's like a two-part thing. It could be profitable, and it could help the planet.
Yeah, and I mean, it kind of takes on, like, from the movies of the 90s, because that was the proposed solution in, like, Deep Impact and Armageddon.
Yeah, you got to figure out how to move it. I mean, I'm pretty sure there'd probably be more the lines of, like, strategically putting a rocket on, like, a side of it and just shooting that off and trying to change the trajectory, as opposed to, like, a nuclear bomb, which solved every problem for every action movie in, like, the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. Like, we're going to need to nuke it. It's the only way to save everyone, just to further reinforce we are justified what we did to Japan. They'll say, we've used nukes to solve a lot of problems.
See? I told you they'd come in handy.
Yeah. That's the reason we made 100,000 of them.
Really? Oh, yeah. Maybe some not so great news on that front is the ending of one of the ballistic missile treaties that has been in place for 30 plus years.
That's a weird thing and a weird time for that to happen. This is bizarre.
Yeah. So for maybe people that don't follow international weapons control, the Intermediate Ballistic Missile Treaty was signed by Gorbachev and Reagan in the 80s. Basically, it would stop all development of these medium range missiles that were basically can go from hop from one country to another in Europe, basically, 500 kilometers to like 3,000 kilometers. So they're not like, they can't fly across the continents or anything like that, like from the U.S. to Russia. These were considered more dangerous because they were more likely to be used. They're short range. You have no chance of shooting it down, and there's a good chance you won't even see it coming. And so they decided that they were going to stop developing them and stop deploying them in the 80s. They signed the treaty. Well, Russia's been cheating. They've been developing an intermediate ballistic missile and actually deployed it like a couple years ago. And the U.S. has been continually raising hell about this. And then I think it was in 2018 or whatever, Trump and Secretary of State decided that they were just going to say, fuck it, we're leaving the treaty because Russia's not even abiding by it. So now that treaty is no longer in effect. It's officially been voided by all the parties. So anyone can start developing. And it sounds like there's now plans for the U.S. to go forward with the intermediate missile program. So, yeah. Not good news, but
that's just a weird thing to kind of slip by us.
Yeah, well, when there's all these tweets to talk about, it's easy to not talk about more nuclear weapons.
But the tweets are outrageous.
Well, have you seen Andy Serkis? I think it was on Jimmy Kimmel. I think it was on Kimmel's. No, not Kimmel's show. I don't know. Somebody's night show. He was reading Trump's tweets in the voice of Gollum.
Oh, really?
It's hilarious. Yeah, Andy Serkis is King Kong, Gollum, Caesar from Planet of the Apes. He does all the CGI animal characters in like five different movies. So they asked him, they're like, would you mind reading some of Trump's tweets in Gollum's voice? And it's on YouTube. It's freaking hilarious.
I'm going to watch it right after the show. I like that Zach Brannigan was reading Trump quotes.
Yes.
That was ridiculous. That was such a crazy nail on the head. Oh, my God. I don't care who you are.
Our president is Zach Brannigan.
Seriously.
That is exactly like in that TV show. Like, he keeps getting awards and keeps getting promoted, even though he's grossly incompetent. But he just... And he says things that just make no sense. And it's like, yeah, but he somehow always ends up on top, like getting credit for stuff that he didn't do. It's just like, oh my God, that's our current president. It's like, ugh.
That's too much, man. That's too much. It's a weird time. But what time is it? We got a whole hour?
We are actually 10 minutes short of an hour. But I mean, unless there was anything left from Stranger Things or... if there's anything else that pops in your mind, I got no science news or anything, so I'm actually done. And I can't, other than to just give Stranger Things 5 out of 5 stars, 10 out of 10, great, great show. Season 3 is as good as the first two. And, I don't know. That's how I would wrap it up. But, fucking awesome show.
Yeah. It's cool. Glad it exists.
So,
Well, I guess bye, everyone.